You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
At Care Heating and Cooling, we put you first. You are the reason we're open 7 days a week and why it's easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Your safety is why we check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. And it's because of you that our techs are paid to fix your furnace, not sell you a new one. So it's no surprise that last year Care was awarded a BBB Torch Award for ethics, because at Care, we're committed to doing business right. Call Care at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners and watchers. Welcome to another chapter of the SDR Disco Call Show. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and the point of this show is to help people in the world of sales development or tech sales meet beautiful, interesting, and wonderful people to figure out what was their journey coming into this industry. What have they learned? What have been the highs? What have been the lows to inspire you to either come into this industry or perhaps to get a bit of perspective whilst you're still in the role? This is currently available on all podcast platforms. If you're listening to this on Spotify or perhaps Apple, make sure that you give us a rating, subscribe, and share this with somebody you think could benefit. We also put this out on YouTube, and to help with the algorithm, it would really be helpful if you could give us a like, comment, and share below. But anyway, coming back to this show and this chapter with a guest, we've got somebody who is a ray of sunshine. They've got so much colorfulness to their career that we had to get them on here. That's a bar. But with this guest, this is somebody that I actually got to meet towards the back end of last year. I went to go visit them in their office, meet their team, and they themselves are a leader. But they allowed me to lead with some bars and spit some lyrics and show them a music video. And I'll always remember that with the Happy Selling, hell yeah. But guests, without further ado, could you tell us who are you? Where are you based in the world? And what do you do?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Neil. And thank you again for spitting bars, albeit at the end of last year. I missed them. Need to get you our next kickoff. So I'm Janie. I'm a sales development manager at Reward Gateway Edenred. I've been here now for just under 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I am currently based in West Sussex in the South Coast.
Thank you very much. And Janie, an absolute pleasure and privilege to have you on the show. And yes, Neil is available for LSKOs. Anywho, and obviously, Janie, what we love to know with all of our guests, outside of the world of tech sales and sales development and leadership, what does Janie like to get up to? What are your interests, passions, and hobbies?
Yeah, I think big passion for me, unsigned music, going mm-hmm. to a lot of local events based in the South Coast. We're really blessed to have loads of great venues that host unsigned music nights, also signed music as well. A big festival goer. We're going to Glastonbury. That's in 6 weeks' time now. Woo. I am so excited. I've also recently become a dog mum. So we rescued a little sausage dog from Korea. Her name is Nora. It's a little bit of what I do outside of work.
Thank you very much for sharing. And yes, 100% West Sussex, Brighton area. They really know how to get down with the music. And I had a couple of gigs back in the day. Actually, funny enough, I went to a show with Gigs, which was absolutely mental. And do you know what? With Gigs, big fan of him, but he is completely different from performing on tracks in the studio to what he is in live. On live, he's a hell of a lot more animated and much more aggressive, you could say, when it comes to musicality, but definitely one to watch. But yes, shouts out to the West Sussex and Brighton, massive. So what we like to do at this point of the show is visit our guest LinkedIn profile, because we always think it's nice, because that's where most of us live within the world of tech sales, on social media, right? So if you're not on LinkedIn, make sure you get on LinkedIn. And Janie's LinkedIn profile will be within the show notes, so you can either connect with her, check her out. She has a lot of awesome posts, a lot of learning, and one of my favorite people to follow out there on LinkedIn. Oh, there's something with us back in the day. Yay! Mm-hmm. But anyway, as you can see, you've got a really cool, colorful career. You've been in quite a few places. If we kind of go back in the day, you've got UCL, you've got working at Heap, you know, you're also part of SDR Leaders of EMEA. Shouts out to David Wilkins and crew. And obviously working at Reward Gateway Edenred for the past like near enough 2 years. But Janie, tell us kind of like in your own words, going back straight in the day, like what was your story? How did you get into this industry? Who is Janie Cannons?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I started off, I think it's worth starting off pre-SDR world, as anyone should. Was in my A-level, 17. And at that point, I really loved the music scene, as I mentioned. And so one of the first things I did was music journalism. I was going to Unsigned Nights in West Sussex. I had like a really cheap as chips blog post where I'd write about the events that I'd gone to, the artists, the up-and-coming bands that I really liked, and then would share it with the bands immediately afterwards, being like, hey, I did a review of your set last night in Worthing, or your set in Chichester, or your set in Brighton. And very quickly, I was like, hey, I could run events. Like, I can do that.
Hmm.
And so I did, even though technically, by a lot of local council laws, I wasn't really allowed to be in the building past a certain time because I was underage.
Yeah.
But I, just being around alcohol. But actually, I wasn't interested in that part of the scene. I genuinely was just interested in making a name for myself when it came to music. I had no music background. Like, I think I did the clarinet when I was like 12. So I had no business being this interested. And very quickly, I launched an unsigned music events night that was more of a local evening, like, Albatross Audio is what we were called, Albatross Audio Presents. And so we did a lot of events in Brighton, everything from like grime to acoustic to indie. And then I got towards the end of my A-levels and realized I need to start making a plan. And this isn't scalable. I'm just, you know, at the time it was like NME, like that's what you did, right? Like those are the guys leading the way. I was never going to be an NME. I didn't have the funds of a 17, 18 year old who could do this long term. So I did a degree in archaeology, as anyone would do. Makes sense, obviously, right? So I went to UCL, I moved to London, I did a degree in archaeology. I then went to go do my master's degree in something called Thanatourism, or negative archaeology. And that's largely attributed to sites of negative heritage. So actually a lot of my research was around what does it mean to be in places that have dark negative associations in terms of their heritage. What does that mean for future remembering the dead, remember those who have passed? And so a lot of the research I was doing at the time, especially towards my master's, was around Grenfell Tower. And I don't know if anyone remembers, but...
Yeah, the fires.
Right, yeah. And right around that time, there was a famous article that had been published very quickly, not least so a few days, if not the same day, but a coach had taken a coach load of tourists past Grenfell Tower. They parked up and were taking selfies out of it. And it caused absolute outrage, as it would do.
Yeah.
People were mad and they had every right to be. But it really, I guess, in my head, like sparked this curiosity of like, why? Like, why does that upset people? I know why. I know why it's wrong in terms of like, I wouldn't do that personally, but why? Why are people upset by that? And you may see like car crashes, and you see where people have had a car crash or an accident on the road, that people leave flowers at that site. And I was really interested as to why, you know, why do we want to remember that's the place where they died or had a horrific incident? Why are we not remembering them in other ways? And so a lot of my research was around that in terms of archaeology, which I like talking about because not many people would always make that in that link.
Association,
between, between like digging on sites, which I did do a lot of, and to what I then specialized in. And then after that, I graduated in 2018-19, and I was looking for a job, any job. And I applied for Sussex Police as a detective, their detective program they do for any recent graduates. I was in that process, but I knew it was going to take a hot minute. So I was like, I need to find a job that's going to earn me some money. And that is how I ended up with Pareto, did a whole SDR assessment day, presented why I want a job in sales. I mean, like, I had no idea about sales, and then very fortunately landed my first job as an SDR at Heap, as one of their founding SDRs.
Yeah.
So I look back now and I laugh because I don't, at that moment in time, as a recent 20-year-old graduate, had any concept of what it actually meant and the responsibility to be a founding SDR. And I don't think I appreciated at the time just how much of a risk it was for that business who was launching and expanding into the US, how much responsibility this founding SDR would have, and actually how much that also helped me propel myself forward with my career. So I'm quite a colourful start, I suppose, Neil.
That is super colourful. There's so many elements in, and I want to be mindful of our time here together because I would love to unpack all of those things. But a couple of things, Janie, that stood out to me there, where firstly, like with the gigging part and with music and reading to aspirational magazines of like wanting being to NME, but, you know, working with that environment, you're probably coming across a lot of creative peoples, and like we're both creatives as well, right? And I think music has always been a passion within my life, and meeting so many different artists. But I think what I've realized in the last few years working in tech sales, and I've been a bit more brave about posting my music online, there are so many musicians and artists that work in the tech world, but some of them don't, you don't, like you said, you wouldn't put that link to them. But I've met people that play the guitar. I've seen some other guys that used to tour. I've seen some other people that play piano. I was in recent one of my power hours, and there's this guy that plays Christian faith music, but he can like do the piano. And he said, I actually sent him a DM because I said, what's the, I saw on your LinkedIn profile, there was a you on a piano. What's there? And he says, oh, I do music, gospel music, and I play the piano. And I said, have you got anything I can listen to? And he sent me one of his clips, and he had the vocals of like Elton John. And I was like, you didn't sound like that on the power hour. I was like, oh my God. So I love the musicality side to it. And then obviously, as you're going through understanding, right, you're going to go for your degree, you're going to go for your master's, you're at UCL, you've got the archaeology piece there as well. For me, hearing your journey, Jenny, there was this spirit in you that's like you're striving for things, but you're trying to figure out where you're going to go to. To an essence, you have this entrepreneurial spirit vibe going in you. Like you're this young person in your 20s, you're trying to climb these things, but you're figuring out where you're going to go, you need to make money, etc. And the reason why that I say that is I kind of had that vibe in me in my 20s, like before I got into tech, because as most of our audience and listeners know, like I got kicked out of college, I didn't go to uni, but I was like, I want to make something of myself, but I don't really know what, so I'm open to trying these new things out, and going through different roles in industries and trying different stuff out. But what was the drive behind you, Jenny? That's kind of what I'm trying to get into the crux of, or let's dig that a little bit, like archaeology, music. What was your, how, what, yeah, where did your drive stem from at that age?
I think curiosity, if I'm honest. Like, I was interested in music, and it wasn't enough just to go to gigs. I had to write about it. And then it wasn't enough just to write about it. I had to then be the best person to launch events, because I was like, these events are like pretty mid, and there's like the artists are great, but like what are we delivering? Like, what's the experience we're delivering? And as someone who was 17, 18, who found like really great talent, but they weren't getting the right audiences, and the recognition, or like the audience there, and the people weren't really, really excited about turning up, I took certain concepts of like, well, I wonder if Secret Comedy Club had just launched in London at the time, and you paid £1. You had no idea who you were going to see, but it could be everyone from like a Russell Howard to like Bob Mortimer, and you had no idea who you were paying for. And so we started doing like unsigned, like blind nights. So you were paying £1 for a ticket, but you didn't know who you were going to see, and you didn't know whether or not you were going to be posted in the pictures at the end of the night. And I think a lot of that came from curiosity of, well, what if we did do it? What if we just tried? And I think something I really admire about younger Janie that I wish more risk-averse Janie would take from her is, well, let's just try. Let's just try and figure it out. And actually, that's not maybe what I have less of now. It's more that I think she was a lot braver. And she was a lot braver, and she maybe turned a blind eye at the time to what ifs if it went wrong, and focus just of, but what if it could be amazing, and what if it was perfect, because I've got that work ethic that would just never allow it to not be. And I think as you get older, and especially as you get a bit uglier and you get into the world of management and leadership, it ages you, and very quickly you are having the bravery has to be there all the time as a leader, but I guess what you probably focus a lot more on is like, okay, well, I need to consider the what ifs, and I need to consider the risks, and I need to consider what are the long term, because like my decisions now could impact not only just tomorrow, but it could impact the next 3, 6, 12 months. Yeah. I don't want them to. So I guess as a leader now, looking back at someone who was 17, who was brave, who just thought it was always the positive outcome, never the negative potential outcomes that could come of it.
Mm.
And I would love to get a little bit more back of that in my life. But that's maybe that's one for my therapist in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to like bring a kind of like a therapeutic conversation that I recently had this week. But where you said like that younger Janie and the thing that you loved about her was in essence like the lack of fear, right?
Mm.
Like for context this week, I was delivering like a sales training session. And one of my best mates, he'd gone out to Ibiza for a week with mates. And like, he's a crazy party animal and he's a DJ and he's, you know, he's done his big things and everything. As just before I got into like the training session on Zoom, like my WhatsApp goes and it's my mate and it's like 10 a.m. and he's video calling me from Ibiza. And I'm like, if it's my boy, I'm always going to answer that, right? Without a doubt. So I hadn't heard from him like 3 or 4 days because I wished him like, have a good time in Ibiza, but stay safe. And he hollers me and like, he's in the bed and he's like, yeah, you're all right, bro, how you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm good, I'm good. And he says, I'm coming home later today. And I was like, cool. And I was like, are you all right? He was like, and he just seemed a little bit anxious. And I'm like, he's safe. He said, like, I've not even been drinking here. I've had a good time. And everything like that. I said, yeah, but I'm coming home. And something in me was just like, I know you for many a year and you for just to tell me you're coming home, that's not you.
Mm.
So I said, all right, give me a shout when you get back later, when you've landed safely. And the day's done. We've come to the end of the day. And then he rings me and he says, yeah, I'm just heading home now. I'm in the car coming from Gatwick. And he says, you at home? And I was just like, yeah. And he says, can I pass through? And I was like, yeah, of course. So I finish off and like I let him through the door. I said, bro, I just need to record some content video. Like, you go sit in the living room. I'll be with you in a minute. Let yourself in. And when I go into the room, he's just like sprawled out on my sofa and he's just looking out the window. And I was like, bro, are you all right? And it was just like, he says, like, when we were younger, man, we didn't give a shit about a lot of things, innit? And I'm like, all right, where's this come from? What have you been on? and again, he's been on nothing. So like, shouts to him. And like, we're getting into deep. And like, he had like this perspective of going out to Ibiza, seeing a lot of young people all dressed up, looking chiseled, having good times. And he just said he felt so outside of it. He's a bit older now. And he just said, it just wasn't me, bro. And he just says like, why do we worry? Like, why we've got so many commitments in life? We've got so many what ifs. So when you've said the what ifs, that was what he was saying as well. And I said to him, I was like, bro, imagine this year, like when we was in our 20s, we went out raving, we were doing clubs and gigs. We could get mashed on the weekend and we'd have a whole weekend to recover. But I didn't have a kid then, right? And I just started my work and my job in my tech sales thing. He was like, yeah, your tech sale, happy. I said, no, happy selling wasn't then, bro. It was when I started tech. He was like, oh, okay, cool. Doesn't understand tech fully. And we were just talking about it. I said, back then we did so much because we didn't fear consequences because we had no idea what the world was going to be like. But to your positive outcome point, that's what we were looking for. We were like this established point in life. Like when you're in your 20s, I felt like we'd made it to the adulthood. Now I'm 40. I'm like, yeah, bro, you weren't even anywhere close then, right? But it's this, to your point, when you reflect back is you did all those brave things. But you didn't see it as perhaps brave back then. It was just you were doing the thing and you were perhaps maybe doing things other friends or family members weren't doing, but it was new and it was different to the environment. So yeah, I think going back into that therapy-based thing, I always talk about inner child work with my therapist. And I said, there were versions of Neil that I wish that I could emulate again. So like even when I go to a gig and music, I'm not the same MC as I was when I was 13, 17, in my 20s to who I'm now. I'm more prouder of who I am. And we were having a chat before this, like I've got some cold bars on my board. But yeah, it's the reflection bit. I don't think we can ever go back to a former version. But even to take this on a wild tangent, I know we're going on one, but you've sparked off something in me, right? I've been delivering sales training this week. And at the beginning of the year, it was already built and it was still being formed. But what I used to do in Happy Selling, Janie, about 2 or 3 years ago, when we were doing remote sales training, I used to do this thing with my students where we would get through an hour of learning, we'd have a break, and then we'd come back into the Zoom. And before I hit the PowerPoint, I used to say to the students, like, I know you're at home, Jenny, but I want you to stand up right now. And you'd be looking like, what? I say, stand up with me. And we'd both stand up. And I said, I want you to breathe up and put your arms up and go, and then go breathe out. And I want you to do that 4 times with me. And they'd all start laughing and like, what the hell are we doing? I said, it's like a hit class with Happy Selling, isn't it? And we'd sit down and we'd get through the other hour and then we'd finish. And at the end, I would then say to them, right, we're going to do this meditation exercise, the same thing we did before we'd start doing this recording. And I'd say, right, how do you feel? They're like, yeah, I feel really refreshed. And the reason I used to do that was A, I wanted to make my sales training different, but B, I wanted the other person to feel like this isn't just a remote Zoom thing. This is actually fun sales training. But with my recent sales training that I've been doing, I haven't been doing that. But I had one cohort yesterday where it was like a 4 till 5 o'clock and it's the end of everyone's day. I'm knackered, they're knackered. And we did it and they were laughing, they were smiling. And I said, how did you find this session? I said, this was fun. So I think you can never go back to who you once were, but you can take facets of it to then bring it into yours. And I know I've gone off on a wild tangent, but...
No, yeah, but it's so true. It's so true. And like, I think there's an element of having, you have to have fun in your job, right?
Yeah, you have to love fun. What you do.
You have to love what you do. And I don't even think it's enough just to like it. Like there's going to be days where you just like it and that's okay, but you need to remind yourself, and it's a conversation I have all the time with reps, is like, remind yourself why you fell in love with this job or why you got the excitement in the first place. Like I remember booking my first meeting and the adrenaline that went through my body when I did it. And then when I did it again, and then that dopamine kind of runs off after a time, and then you become a team lead. And then in that team lead role, you're imparting knowledge to other reps who've never done this before, and they book their first meeting, and that dopamine is way better than the dopamine you got when you booked your own one. And now it's different, and what gets me excited and what makes me have fun with the job is different to what it was 5 years ago, and I should hope so. But I think there has to be an element of like you said, like having fun with it as well. And you know, it's not, I don't mean just like spiffs and like incentive sort of fun, because those are surface level, but actually like, how do you make fun of the job? Like, is it in the personalization piece, is like being a bit brave with that and maybe being a bit more direct than you normally would and actually getting a win out of it and you've surprised yourself? I think there's so much around like the work that people do on themselves in therapy actually does really apply to sales. Like there has to be a level of self-awareness in this job to be successful. And not just self-awareness based on KPIs and all the important stuff that you'll always hear any sales manager talk about, but actually like self-awareness in like who you are, what makes you tick, and how that may show up at work. It's really interesting. Complete tangent as well.
Yeah.
This is going to be a long old podcast.
Yeah, it is. And it's what we love, and it's what I love, why I love having these conversations with you.
Sure.
And again, to take it on another meander around, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to anchor that I would love to talk about being a founding SDR when we come out of this part of this conversation, right? So that's the anchor there. But coming to the element of self-awareness, as we all do on TikTok, we watch something, but something that really hit me in the feels the other day with the reels, which was this person said, if you constantly are aware of your flaws, that's not self-awareness. Self-awareness is knowing your flaws, but also knowing what you're good at and what you enjoy doing. If you're just focusing on your flaws, that's self-deprecating. That's not being self-aware. So taking, you know, recognition as to what you're really good at, what you enjoy doing, but also what you need to work on, that's self-awareness, right? And I was in a power hour this week where a young gentleman came in, and he's been an SDR for a couple of months. And the conversation kind of started off with, you know, the first 3 months of being an SDR, it was kind of stupid, you know, it wasn't really serious. And in my head, I was like, but that was the most, probably the beginning important part of your journey. So I wouldn't call it stupid. But again, I'm not going to challenge somebody on their mindset of how they see themselves, right? But then he was saying like, you know, now doing this thing, like it's like anybody can do the reps, anybody can do the calls, anybody can do the conversations. That's easy. And in my head, I was like, I don't think it's easy, but okay, if that's how you see it. But he said the hardest bit is learning the skills and learning how to have these conversations, right? And he says, anybody can book a meeting. And at that point, I was like, yes, that I agree with that statement to an extent. But what he was focusing on was like his cold call openers. And then he was focusing on like what pattern interrupts to use. And then, you know, at one point wanting to become an AE and just getting to that point B. And I just said to him, I said, that's cool, but here's the way that I look at it. Similar to what you said, that dopamine of booking your first meeting as an SDR, I said, today I am still an SDR. I'm a founder in a company. I'm a freelancer that books leads for another company as well. But when I book a meeting, when I do a discovery call, when I do a client kickoff, those things excite the hell out of me because it still stems from being an SDR, right? But, you know, what I also said was in that at the terms I hate to be labeled against is being a guru, being an expert, and being a specialist, because I said, I'm not that. I said, I'm 20 years deep in this game, but I'm still a student of my craft. And what I meant by that was, I said, in the cold call, I've learned how that person's booked a meeting. I've learned how this person positions their voicemails and says, when I send the follow-up email, it will say rubber ducky and look for the rubber ducky in your inbox. And I said, that's smart, right? I never thought of that. I was speaking to a lovely AE that I've been coaching called Lauren, where she closed one of her biggest deals to date. And I learned how she did that. And I said, that's why I don't see myself as an expert, because I'm still learning all of this stuff. But I said, I enjoy it. So I said, a lot of people focus on how to open a cold call or, you know, what's the best email template. And I'm like, this is all boring to me. Even though I help with these things, I'm not enjoying that bit. I'm enjoying the process of doing it every day, learning a new technique. That's the fun part. And I kind of said, like, you know, there's a lot of sales books out there. And as a lot of people know, is that I don't really like enjoy reading sales books in my spare time because it's about work and I don't want to be doing that stuff. I like to listen to music stuff or watch videos about, you know, creative and psychology. That's the stuff that I get with. But the point that I was trying to put home to this young gentleman was being a practitioner. Because when you're in the trenches and you're doing this stuff day in, day out, that's where you learn. That's where you pick up the skills. That's the thing you should focus on. But I said, I've come to that conclusion and it's taken me 20 years to get there. So there's still a journey to come on. So rather than focusing on getting promoted to AE and closing deals, because I said, you know, even on the mindset of being a top performer, I said, I've been a global top performer twice in my life when I was in SDR life, right? But I said, I didn't even want to be a global top performer. It was just because I was doing the work and then I just ended up having the highest numbers in the company. But then I said, here's the problem. When you get to the top, you have to maintain that status. And that in itself is very stressful. And most people, when they get to the top, it's hard to make, they just want to jump off. They're like, I can't do this anymore. But I said to him, if you can focus on consistency, so like even as an SDR, great if you hit 100% of your target month to month, you as a leader would love to hear that as well. But I also said to my reps, like I said, I was looking for the person that was 80% month to month consistently, because I could count on that person to always be there, right? But the person who hit 120, like 100%, then 158%, and then 60%, and it was like that, that used to scare me, right? But people want to attain to this top figure because, again, it may be because of LinkedIn, I don't know, or people saying, oh, I've hit 100% of quota and I've done this. But I'm like, it's the journey and going through that and living it. And that's why, you know, I still love being an SDR. And I think with my sales coach, when I joined with them, I was one of their founding SDRs because I was a coach, but I was also looking for leads for them as well. And within Happy Selling, I'm an SDR looking for customers. And with my podcast, when I booked a meeting with you, I was, the dopamine went off the hook. I was like, I booked her with JD, like, we get to do a podcast. That's the fun part of it. But I don't know, before we're going into founding SDR, because I anchored that, how does that hit with you, or like what are your thoughts on that, Jay?
It's interesting because it's also a conversation I've had this week in a one-to-one where I've got a brand new SDR. I say brand new, they've been in the business now just shy of like 6 weeks. So it's still quite new, still quite new for them. Former to this, they were in recruitment 5 years at the top of their game in recruitment. I actually introduced them to one of my old SDRs from 5 years ago, who's now an account executive at the top of their game at a different business now. And just hearing the feedback that was given in that conversation to each other and the coaching and mentorship in that is, it's so cyclical and so nice to hear. But actually, it's something that hearing someone I used to coach 5 years ago, giving the advice I gave to them 5 years ago, now coming back around is so warming to hear. But one of the biggest keys of that was this new SDR is really keen on, like, you know, I want to go through the ranks. I want to get to AE really quickly. I need to get there. That's where I'm really successful, like smashing the game already as a ramping SDR. And actually, the person who was mentoring them was exactly the same 5 years ago. And actually said, you know what? You get into that SMB AE role and realize your ego really fooled you and that everything you thought you knew, you didn't. And if you constantly think you want to be the best, that mindset, albeit is helpful in terms of getting that 100%, 120% of President's Club, those are really helpful. And of course, any business wants that. Any high-performing business wants that. But actually, when we talk about high performance, I'm not always talking about those end numbers. I'm talking about continuous improvement, growth, the excitement you get from learning something new. Mm. And if you're in that mindset of just being the best, you're not receptive to learning anymore. Yeah. And that's where I, and to your point, actually, that's where my fun comes from now as a leader, because fun looks different and getting enjoyment looks different. But for me, it's like learning, right? Like I am really, really well embedded right now in this mindset of human-led leadership and situational leadership. And I'm really trying to learn a lot more around neurodiversity, how that impacts people and how they show up to work, people that show up with their own grief and trauma and their lived experiences. Whether or not you want to believe as a manager you're responsible for some of that and you're going to be responsible for navigating people through that,
yeah,
that's for you to unpack. But actually, it's really important our role as a manager is to help people turn up to work with this, with their rich life tapestries, and figure out how to do the job and get the best of them for their success and also business success. Mm. And sometimes it may be actually a rep is really struggling booking meetings because they're really focused on one particular outbound channel, whatever that may be. But actually maybe it's just for that week trying to get them to find enjoyment in learning something new. Mm. And maybe the learning something new is, like you said, like speaking to another rep outside the four walls of their own business and finding out what they're doing. And it may not be any different, but actually maybe just an external voice is going to be what changes it. Hmm. Or maybe it's attending an in-person event for something completely out of your remit, just learning. Because I think if you start thinking you're at your ceiling because you are an overperformer very, very quickly, you're going to get to that 60% like you mentioned the next quarter because you're not receptive to learning something new. And I've seen it happen time and time again.
Yeah. Seeing it time and time again, like I see it in so many coaching sessions, like when I meet somebody for the first time. And I loved your story of the full circle of somebody you coached 5 years ago and now they're helping share that knowledge. That's the point of knowledge, it's to give it out into the world so then it can be shared and paid forward to somebody else. But every time... I don't know. Part of this is my ego coming into this, but I meet a new rep for the first time. They come into the Zoom and they've been booked in for a 35-minute session. And I tell them, like, you know, there's any topics that I can help with. And I say, look, Janie, most topics people want help with when they book something in with me is around cold calling. It could be around social selling. It could be, you know, reviewing your cold calls and the actual recordings, or perhaps, you know, it's around time management. Those are the four like major things people want to start off with, right? And then I kind of have like a designed three sessions of like the first one is around time management and how to hit target. The second one is, you know, how to go outbound and the mindset with it. And then the last one that we do together on a 3-point course is cold calling audit. So you'd like to do a role play with me. And when I share it to these reps for the first time, they look at it and said, oh, I'm really good at emailing already. No, I'm okay with cold calling. Outbound, I've already had onboarding with it. I'm fine with it. I'm really doing good. And I'm like, okay, so where do you think you need help? I'm not really sure. And I said, all right, well, how about this? Why don't we go through this course? Because I've done it lots of times with new people that I've met. And then, you know, throughout the next few weeks, if you want to change something or tweak something, you know, you lead the session. And most at the beginning are very apprehensive. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, I guess we can have a look through it. By the time we get to the end of that first session, they're like, I didn't know this. I never thought about that. And oh, actually, I'm going to start using that. And I said, okay, do you want to continue the path or do you want to tweak it? And they're like, let's continue it. But if I get into the second one, I want to change the third one. Are we okay to do that? I said, yeah, Janie, totally cool. But as a sales trainer and coach, I know how this is going to run, right? Mm. We get to the end of the second session. And then I'm like, so what do you think? I said, yeah, I didn't think about this. Actually, I've never thought about that because we don't do this internally the way that we do it. So there's something that I try to input and instill into them before we finish that session is, as an SDR, have a beginner's mindset. Everything you come across, try to look at it with a fresh pair of eyes for the first time. Like I was on a podcast recording with somebody else last Friday and they were launching their own one. And rather than coming into it as a host and I've done this thing and I've even used the same, they're using the same platform as me. I was like, I'm a guest. Like, so how does this work? What do you want me to do? And is this okay to say? I was acting like that because I wanted to enjoy it, you know? Mm. So yeah. They say, practice. I think it's Rembrandt who made the quote, like, practice what you know and you'll find out what you don't know.
I think there's something so powerful in having a beginner's mindset all the time. Mm. And I think it goes back to like fearlessness. Mm. It goes back to vulnerability. Actually, it's really vulnerable every time you put yourself in that position. It's really uncomfortable as well, because ego is at the door being like, you already know this. Like, just don't. And then you're not susceptible to listening. And so like you're fighting off that ego, that voice that's making judgments so quickly when someone trying to teach you something that you may have an inkling of what you already know. But actually, like, sometimes it's just being completely vulnerable and going, you know what? Saying it out loud as well, saying, you know what, Neil, I'm going to attend this session today. And I feel like I know a few of these things already. I'm going to be pretty vulnerable in saying that I appreciate maybe that's a problem in itself, that I think know everything I need to know. Let's start from basics. And like so many times, like I have one-to-ones and reps, I'm like, okay, let's talk about this week. And they're like, yeah, no, I've got it down to a T. Then we do it together and they haven't. Yeah. and that's okay. But I think sometimes we're so blinded by our own prejudgments that we have of ourselves and the ceilings and limitations we put on ourselves that actually we don't ever want to show up to work and not show that we're not perfect or that we haven't tried our hardest. Mm. And because of that, I think we really limit our ability to do great, great work. And I think something I've tried to do, especially in these last 12 months, is be really vulnerable with my team if I don't understand something as well, my job isn't to have the answers all the time. Like maybe part of my job is being honest and being vulnerable with you guys and you teaching me new ways at work. I'm not accustomed to against the thought that what worked for me 5 years ago still works today. I think if you are an SDR manager who's trying to impart things on your team because it's how you've always done it, maybe now is the time just to look outside and look elsewhere.
100%. And I've unfortunately been that manager years ago, and I learned the hard way that stuff doesn't work. And I've been challenged by reps publicly and made to look like an idiot when it didn't, and when it flopped in my face, I'm like, yeah, Neil, that humbles you a little bit. Right? And I think coming to this beginner's mindset thing, and it kind of harps back to when I was saying I'm not an expert, I don't like to be called a guru or anything like that, because that would then be the mindset of I've attained the highest of the high and I know everything. Then life would be boring if you knew everything. It's like opening a book and just getting to the last chapter and then just saying I'm done. There's no much joy to that, right? There's always be learning. So I think a way to kind of program your brain is when you go into anything, ask yourself the question, what new thing can I learn in here today? Okay, I've done cold calling or I've done emailing. And it's the same with leadership. Just because you've onboarded a rep and they're going through your onboarding program, ask yourself, what could we do different this time? Ask the rep, how did you find it? What would you tweak? What would you change? Rather than expecting them to follow the template that you've built because it worked for you. I think to your point, you then limit that ceiling, but then that's not a growth mindset and you won't grow if you just stay with that thing. And I think it comes back to like the challenger set where you've got the different personalities. You have the blocker, and the blocker is a person that doesn't like change, doesn't like things being moved around. They just like it as is. But you could really limit yourself in life professionally as well as personally, that if you don't want to grow. And I think going back to that thing where I asked you at the beginning of this show was what was driving that young Janie Ford. And I think it was that hunger, it was that growth and just wanting to move forward. So it's beautiful to come in that. I love these chats with you, Janie. I really do. So coming to the anchor point of founding SDR, and the reason why I would love to pick your brain on this is in the past few weeks, I've worked with a lot of SDRs who are that founding SDR, or they're going for the job interview to be the founding SDR. And I was a founding SDR, but I didn't know I was, right? Because my company, when I joined my tech company, they had 20 of SDRs in the US, but they were launching it for the first time in EMEA in London. And the way that it was put to me then was like, Neil, we're established in the US, we're now growing our presence, we're going to have a satellite off, and you're going to be the SDR of EMEA. It was, you're going to be the SDR of EMEA, not you're the founding SDR of EMEA and helping us build out this function. So I didn't know it. And I think that was actually probably a blessing, because if somebody said to me back then, like, you're the founding SDR, I'd probably, oh my God. So I would love to know, in your words, what is a founding SDR? What does it mean to be one? And what advice would you give out to people that are perhaps going to be that, or they are that right now?
It's two-pronged, I think, in that response. I think the first element is I had exactly the same as you.
Hmm.
It's never packaged as founding SDR as the SDR of EMEA.
Hmm.
And again, like that naivety that came with me, I didn't really understand it. I was like, you know, of course, I've got a sales team in the US. They're all based in the US. This is really young, exciting. It's a small a small team in the UK. Like, I'd be reporting directly into the MD. Never even questioned what that would mean, reporting directly into an MD.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking back now, I'm like, God, I'd love to report directly to an MD now.
Yeah.
But I, again, that naivety that came with me and just how young I was in my career. So I think for anyone who is that early on and looking at that sort of being a founding SDR, is to really think about the people you're going to be surrounded by as well. Like, who are you going to be reporting into? Are you going to be reporting into a VP of sales who's based in the US? And if you are, what time zone are they on in the US? Are they going to be in San Francisco? Because your one-to-ones are going to be at 5 p.m. moving forward.
When you're knackered from the end of your day and you're coming,
And you can't even coherently explain why you struggled with outbound today.
You're just like...
I don't know. And also just the nuances, right? Like, if you're going to be a founding SDR, and I can only really speak for Amir in this case, it's like... Actually, a lot of your job not only is educating the market, because a lot of the time they're doing this as a satellite job, and so they're going to be a job is educating the market. So you can't do as much of the hard sell as what you may be able to do in a US entity that is well established, that's got US customer case stories that you can really lean on. You know, that's great, you've got US customer case stories, but how are you actually going to use it in EMEA, and how does that translate in EMEA, and how does that translate to a company based in Germany? So I think when we talk about educating the market, it's also educating internally as well what is and isn't working. A lot of our time early on in Heap was saying, hey, it's actually not the done thing to be an SDR in the UK outbounding into Germany. And there's actually quite a lot of legal issues with that, just to let you guys know. Secondly, there's a lot of nuances when it comes to GDPR and like where data is stored. And if you're a real technical business, have you considered where your data is stored? Have you considered the technicalities, what this means for your product team and actually the investments that you hadn't budgeted initially? But again, I was 20 years old, coming from archaeology. And I guess in many ways you could shape and mold my mindset because I was curious as to, oh, well, why is that a problem? Like, why does this exist? So it wasn't a limiting thing for me. I guess I just... learned very quickly. So I think anyone who's looking at a founding SDR role, consider those things. Consider how much of your job is going to be about driving market awareness and educating the market. I think consider who you're reporting to, what that team will look like, what that vision is for that entity. Is it to grow the entity? Is it to stay very much in like boots on the ground for the next 12 months? Ask in your interview process, like, how does that information around what's happening locally then gets translated back into the main HQ, and what does that feedback loop look like? I think really try and understand the vision and whether or not you fit that vision in your mind, or do you want to be part of that journey? I think the next thing for people to consider, especially if you're actually an SDR now who goes, oh yeah, I'm just going to be a founding, I'm just going to be a single SDR at a new company as a founding SDR.
Yeah.
Just think what you know now is somewhere in like a probably well-established SDR organization versus to being a founding SDR, it could be really isolating. And also with any founding sales role, there is a lot of risk. There is a lot of risk that goes into being that role. There's a lot of potential wins that can come from it, but there's an incredible amount of risk that comes from it. And weigh up that risk. Look at what the competitors are doing already in that market. If it's already well established, how many SDRs they have. Think about how much you're going to be competing against that. Does the company have budget for marketing to actually turn up be in the places where your buyers are? This is all stuff that 20-year-old Janie did not know and was doing at the height of lockdown. And so stuff like in-person events, in-person conferences weren't really a thing. They couldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say like it's risk, but equally you are selling to a different market and you are going to have to be the educator and the bridge between well-founded, well-established business that already exists, that's profitable in most cases, that is profitable enough to be expanding into EMEA. And now you're going to have to be the mouthpiece and the voice of the region that is educating not only sales and go-to-market strategy, but you are the voice of the region even for product. And you need to make absolutely damn sure that if someone is saying, hey, we absolutely will not have our data stored in the US, it has to be stored in the EU, that you have to know you're entering into a business that would be willing or has budget or has considered these things as part of their expansion. Which I don't think is something you're going to learn as a brand new graduate like I did, like I had to learn on the job.
Jane, if you could dress
mic up. Mic drop.
Yeah, if you might drop, I was going to say, like, if you could just like dust your shoulders off there, like, cheese. And so, again, you've opened a can of worms here, Janie.
Yeah.
2 points. So the first one is going to be a story of what I did stupid as that founding SDR. I wouldn't really say stupid, but I just wouldn't make any other SDR do this. And secondly, where I see this as a career starter for something for the future for those founding SDRs, right? So story goes, when I was working in Covent Garden, and to your point, my manager was in San Francisco and, you know, they woke up, we had meetings at 5-6 o'clock in the evening. So young Neil, working in Covent Garden in his zone, I used to get into the Covent Garden office around 7 a.m. for the pure reason that I had to process the inbound leads when we launched that satellite office and we launched the EMEA. And I was processing around 800 inbound leads a week, right? It was cray. And I was the only dude doing that because my US counterparts, they were like, Neil's in EMEA now. It's Neil's job. And I had this fear that if I didn't process all of these inbound leads, I would lose my job. Because again, never been in tech before, never done this job. And I was used to data entry and previous admin jobs. And I thought, this is data entry, but at a large scale. And I'm running, helping this company. And there was this fear, right? So Neil would process all of these inbound leads. And here is the other thing. Somebody asked me the other day, like, where should you start as an SDR? And I said, personally, I always start people on an inbound. Because inbound, you are getting people coming to you with the requirements. You see the job titles asking the questions. They want to have calls. And that's where you're going to learn speaking to those personas. So inbound was a really great place for me to learn about product, market, industry. That was like my Bible learning, right? That was my real onboarding. But Neil had this anxiety of having to process it. Then around 1 or 2 o'clock, I could start doing outbound. And then it got to about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And guess what? America turned on, inbound leads came in. It was just this madness. And then I'd like catch up with my manager about 5 and say, I'm really tired, Kat. I'm really trying to do this. And yeah, I'm just giving it my all because I didn't know any different. Neil wouldn't leave the Covent Garden office till about 10, 11 o'clock at night because I wanted to finish processing all the inbound leads so that it wasn't there the next morning. And I did that for 3 or 4 months. And one day when I had a chat with my manager and I told her my problems and I'm almost burning out and I'm crying and she's like, Neil, why the F are you doing that? You're not supposed to do that. Like, I had no idea. And I was just like, I thought that's what we did. She's like, no. Like, you put them through Salesforce, like you put them into the campaign. We've got something called sequences. You put them in and, oh no, Neil, I'm sorry, but I had no idea. And I was just like, but I learned so much at a cost, but it was really beneficial. So sometimes when I'm speaking to founding SDRs, I'm like, okay, here's some things you need to do. Probably nope, your founder hasn't told you this. And because you're building it out, you're expected to figure it all out. Here's some foundations. And I've helped those people within that, right? But now
equally,
yeah, sorry.
Sorry to interject on that. Yeah. Like, that is a brilliant point of onboarding.
Yeah.
Like, even now, like, is your onboarding going to be in the US? Like, are you going to be learning the product at 10 p.m. UK time?
Yeah.
Like, is that the best time to be learning about product? And the thing is like, you cannot over communicate in the founding SDR role at all. Like, again, like when we talk about beginner's mindset, really, like, that is the role that you need to have a beginner's mindset on, and ask the questions. There are endless questions I probably still have now if I was to ever enter into a founding role again, where really asking like, okay, do we have sequences? And again, if you're novice and you've never done it before, you wouldn't know what a sequence is. So, like, ask the toddler like questions and be persistent with those questions, because it's the only way you're going to learn and maybe not accidentally end up processing 800 MCLs and marketing qualified leads in that time.
Yeah,
but you learnt a lot.
Hell of a lot. And it was hell, not going to lie. But it was, I think it was just part of my chapter. It was part of my journey, but I've seen it happen. And you're right. Like, it's great for you to say that because I think founders that either listen to this, like if you're thinking about building an SDR team, perhaps you're the founder that was initially the company's own SDR, and now you're hiring somebody to be the first boots on the ground. Think about this stuff, about documenting it and, you know, the sequences. And that's why, like, with recent sales training that I've created and I've taken people through, I'm teaching them these basics of like how to build your own sequences. And somebody said to me, like, why do SDRs need to build sequences? I said, trust me, it's something that will benefit you in the future if you leave this job and go into another company and you're a founding SDR. And I've been teaching AEs how to do it. And they said, yeah, we've had sequences from marketing for like a year, but I don't really use them and I don't like the templates. I said, imagine if you could build it yourself and not have to wait for marketing to approve it, right? This is why you need to teach the basics. So I think it's really important, maybe not on the initial onboarding, but later down in that SDR or salesperson career, teach them the stuff like how you build up, you know, other SDRs. But the second point where I think career-wise, a lot of SDRs that I meet, Janie, one day want to go off launch their own businesses, right? They want to be a founder of their own company. And as we've had this chat, this is where the spark has gone off in my head, where I heard you talking about you're the SDR in EMEA launching into Germany about GDPR. You're going into Southern Europe. You're speaking to these well-established businesses that have never heard about this startup, this new disruptor coming into the market because it's established in North America, great, but you're doing it for the first time in EMEA. If you want to launch your own company, I think because I've done that, you've done that, and helping a company launch into market, this is how I did my own company, right? So I'm a solo entrepreneur, business owner, where for 7 years, I'm trying to teach this happy selling methodology for people in Dach, people in France, people in North America, you know, people in Newcastle, people in Liverpool, you know, I've been doing what I was doing as an SDR. That's where I learned the ropes. So I've always harped on about this in SDR training that I've done with Happy Selling, where I said, you're not just an SDR, you are the CEO of your own patch. You're a marketeer evangelizing your company's name through sharing content in emails, white papers, one pages and video testimonials. Two, you're a business professional trying to convince another business to have a meeting with you when they don't know even who the hell you are or why they should be talking to you. Third, you are a product expert over time. When they ask you, how does this API integration work? You may say, I don't know. I need to go chat to Janie. She's going to tell me. She teaches you. You then tell that prospect. And then the next time you ask that question, you know how to answer it. And last but not least, you are a CSM, or you may not be ready to buy today, but you have to nurture that email or that contact in Salesforce over the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months to then pick it back up again and then bring them back into a meeting and create an opportunity, right? You're working. I can even take this a step further. You're working in RevOps. You're running dashboard reports of closed loss campaigns, right? You're speaking to the new hires and helping them come on board. You're basically being like an SDR manager and helping the new hire when you're a team lead. You know, an SDR isn't just an entry into sales. It's also the entry into a whole company. But if you take that SDR founding job and you want to launch your own company, I think that's the best place to learn because you know, when I went into my first company, Zora, one of the prerequisites is that you had to have an MBA to join that company as an SDR. Mad, right? And I was lucky enough that I knew the recruit and they brought me in and I was an exception to the rule. And a year later, they took out that requisite. It was relevant work experience or perhaps having a degree to a certain extent or level. And I was really proud and happy to see that Neil changed something in a company in 2012 for them to take that out of the job description. Because when I became the SDR manager, I didn't have to look for people with the MBAs, but I really take my time in tech. That was my MBA. That was my degree. And when, you know, I meet SDRs and say, I want to launch my own company, I'm like, yeah, you're in the right space. You're in the right space if you really want to do this. But at the same time, it's not easy. And there's a lot, and you have to be in that beginner's mindset. And when my other thing here is where the thing I geek out on is meeting other founders, meeting other CEOs. And I learned that from as an SDR, because when you're at the founding SDR, you initially are reaching out to the C-level, where you have to have a conversation with that C-level person to introduce your company and hopefully introduce your founder and C-level. I got into this mindset of, I want to meet other people that have built something out of like from scratch. It was an ideation in their head, and then they made it a reality where it's a company, it's a team, it's a product. That I used to geek the hell out on. I'd be like, how'd you do that, man? And I'm still like that today. I love meeting founders or people that are building stuff for the first time. That's what attracted me to my sales coach. When they hollered me, they're like, oh, we're building something new. I was like, yeah, I'm in. Like, I want to help build this thing, right? So taking an interest in other people and coming back to this power hour conversation when I was having with this rep this week, I said, be so obsessed with your prospects that rather than ask them what solution did they use to do with X, Y, and Z, ask them how did they become a leader? Like, what's their typical day-to-day like? What annoys them? What are their pains? What are their gripes? How do they lead a team? How do they, you know, build the comp plan? And like, what's been their biggest F up going through that career? I said, if you ask them type of questions, even if you don't book the meeting, A, you're going to build rapport, but B, you're going to learn how they do it. So the next time you meet another VP of sales, you're like, do you know what? I was speaking to this company, they're implementing this comp plan. They're now allowing a percentage of the deal closed to be given to the SDR. They're also working on expanding into, I said, then you're talking their language. And that's where you're going to build a connection with your prospect versus, would you like to take a meeting because we want to? It is.
I've begun to really not like the term people buy from people, and I don't know why. I need to unpack that with myself, but it's true, right? Like, and I cannot stress enough, like, even the way that I've built onboarding today, you don't even learn about the product until the end of your second week of being an SDR here. And that's because I'm so focused on, like, the why, like the landscape, truly the landscape, understanding the personas, what makes them tick. We do persona battle cards where you go listen to calls of our personas today, and then you start building out that persona based on what you've listened to that call, what their day-to-day is like, what their KPIs are like, who do they report into. A big part of what we're doing right now and what I'm trying to get reps to do is actually go in with vulnerability into calls and say, hey, before we kick off, what I really like to do is I speak to loads of HR managers on a day-to-day basis. And what I've learned with speaking to loads of HR managers on a day-to-day basis is that no two HR managers are the same. So can you help me understand what your role is and what you do today, just so that I have a better understanding before we go into the crux of the rest of this call? And what you learn in that small synopsis of who they say they are and what they're responsible for is so much more impactful than learning anything about their project or learning anything more about the wider picture of why they've been having this conversation with you in the first place. And I think coming back to something you said there, which is like loving speaking to CEOs, I think for me, I've really loved that founding story of why companies have been built in the first place. I loved that. I think actually what I now love more so in my later years in my career, not actually my age. What I've come to love more is actually looking at other companies and seeing where the chief revenue officer of a different company has previously come from before. What revenue functions have they built previously? What would and of those businesses, have that business ever IPO'd before? Has it been acquired before? Looking at the chief product officer, where did that product officer come? What platforms have they built? Are these true tech savvy businesses they've been at before that are known for great UX? Like, where do their data people come from? Like, are those companies that I really respect and I personally love? Because that's what gets me excited. Those are the people that I learn from. I learn from those CROs who have been there, done that, got the shirt five times. They know what IPOs look like. And I have trust in them when I see that. Does a chief product officer come from like building tools like Uber and Deliveroo and Meta, like the truly technical products that have so much that goes into it, but equally is so successful? So I think those are things that you learn to appreciate and recognize once you've been a founding SDR, though, because in that founding world, you start recruiting really quickly based on your kind of badges, I suppose. And you start to be a lot more exposed to that sort of people in your life so that you're more accustomed to looking for it. Because really interesting when you're saying like being the CEO of your own business, essentially as a founding SDR, that is what the job is. And it's actually what someone told me when I was a founding SDR, is that you need to treat this job like you're the CEO of your own business. And so a lot of the skills I learned from that, I've now taken to different businesses that I've since moved to. And then I'm looking at other SDRs and I'm like, hey, this isn't new to be looking at like closed loss stuff. Like, this isn't new, but maybe actually I'm learning now that it is, because it's stuff that I learned in founding world that maybe others didn't get that experience.
You're right. Because I always, I had to check my ego at the door a couple of times when I've gone into companies where, I remember when I went from Zora to then working at Showpad. I remember, so Zora, like, we went to Series F. They did go IPO eventually, thanks for the shares. And when I went into Showpad, I felt like I'd gone from university and back into college, because they weren't that far along. So I was bringing all these ideas of closed loss campaigns and like email templates. And they were like, to them, it was like I'd just shown them the holy grail. And I was like, nah, bro, like, this is just standard stuff you do in tech. And I was like, my VP said to me, David said, like, you've built this, but we've never done this stuff before. This is new for a lot of people. And I was just like, ah, right. So every time I went into a new project, either as an SDR manager for hire or a sales trainer via Happy Selling, that was kind of like one of my, what do you call it? I was seen as an asset, because Neil had these playbooks and stuff that, dude, we'd pay like 10K to Deloitte to build this stuff for us. I'm like, you get a discount with Happy Selling if you renew your contract, you know. It was like I had to kind of put my ego at the door a lot of the times, and I've had to check myself a lot of times where I've got frustrated, where people just don't get it or they don't see where this is going to go. So, you know, every time I deliver a sales training project to a company, they're like, "No, what results can you guarantee?" I'm like, "No." And they're like, "What do you mean you can't guarantee stuff?" I said, "Well, look, It's like being a PT in the gym. I can show you how to bench and curl, but I can't do the work for you. But typically people that go through this stuff, these are the results they have seen if they follow the process and path. But equally, what's worked for me years ago may not work today. You know, you need to tweak this, and I'm happy to work with you to kind of tweak it as well. But yeah, I think being that founder in SDR is, you know, it's kind of like doing a course in entrepreneurship. Because again, those things at the age of 20, none of my mates were doing that stuff because they were working in established companies that already had processes, had been around for a number of years. And that's kind of like where I went into the, like, I didn't want to have an employee mindset, because when I was an SDR, I didn't feel like I was an employee. I felt like I was part of a founding team that was building something from the ground up. And that is amazing. And to caveat it, it's not for everyone. Some people do like having the established place where they can come in, everything's already defined for them, right? And there's nothing against that. So it's like picking like what's right for you. But I'd say it's at least an experience if you want to try it out. Because I have met other SDRs that were there, the founding, and it's not burnt them out, but they've just realized it's not for them. And they would rather go into a company that already has the sales team. They have the playbook. And, you know, that's kind of where they want to go. I'm like, if that's for you, then go for it. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, this has been a deep chat.
I think the last thing I'll say on that is really question how much autonomy you're going to get being a founding SDR. Like, yeah. Is this, we're going to pick up the playbook from the US and drop it in EMEA? How much iteration can you do on that? How much can you play around with that? In the same way, I'd be questioning like talk tracks for phones. Like, do I have autonomy and freedom to change this? Because I really do think it's really interesting when you say like employee mindset. I was listening to another podcast in the last week with Emma Greed, who was on the Diary of a CEO podcast, and she was saying she's a CEO, she was attending board meetings, and she was getting really flappy when she was attending them. And her husband said to her, turned to her just before her next board meeting and went, I know your problem. You've got an employee mindset. And she hated to hear that. And I really resonated with that because I am an employee. Of course I'm an employee. But in just how I navigate and how I present myself at work and how much I care deeply about the job that I do in any company, I really embody that CEO mindset that I didn't realize I had because of the founding SDR job. So I really can't echo enough what you're saying, that if to at some point be an entrepreneur or be a CEO or be a founder of something, the founding role will teach you so much, because actually in most cases the founder isn't coming to EMEA to be with you in those early days. They will come and visit at the 6 month mark and maybe come and do some discovery work. You really are the founder in so many ways, in most cases reporting directly into an MD or a VP of EMEA. So really what I did was create a Notion, and I had a little Notion table. And for every time I learned something, I made a point of just making a note of what I had learned or what I had achieved. And I still do that now. And that's one thing I take away 5 years later, is I aggregate tables of currently right now, the average time to a new rep joining the business to booking their meeting is now 27 days. It used to be a lot longer.
Yeah, that's quick. That's amazing.
And I've always made a point of like those sort of little achievements I've been able to do, I've just aggregated them. And in the same way, a CEO would probably be making notes of their milestones and also their 5 year milestones.
Yeah.
Like, do that for yourself, because it's a nice little happy file to have for yourself, but equally it's going to be massively impactful for any interviews you go into.
100%. And the reason I want to put this now as a tip to our audience, so Janie, thank you very much. To prove this stuff, like what Jane is talking about, this is something I say to a lot of SDRs. So if you can see my screen, this is my Dropbox, right? This is basically happy selling and stuff that I've been doing for many a years. And as you can see within here, I've got like, where do we go into? Like playbooks, just collecting stuff that I've either learned from or I've built. And in conversation, so we've got like playbooks, how we do outbound prospecting, either stuff I've taken, I've built like cadences and all of that. Even when it comes into like messaging, I've got like stuff from cold calls that I used to do, like emails. I've got examples of my days at Showpad, you know, in mails, like how I used to do it, like a masterclass for all of this sort of stuff. And I say to founding SDRs, document the hell out of everything you're doing. Because when it comes to a job interview and they say, why should we give you the job? Rather than I just hit 100% and I hit quota, et cetera, you're an asset when you say, well, I've actually got the playbook from my last company of what I built, the templates and the ICP and all of that. And what I loved what you said was, can you see my top right corner? I've got something called Happy Folder. These are all the people that I'm coaching or I've coached where they've won, they've hit President's Club or they've won an award or they've hit target. And I think my most recent one, if I find it, there's just too many. Like with Saad Ghaffour, I helped him hit SDR of EMEA through Wiser Elite. And I remember when I first met the young guy, he was so like, I don't believe your shit, Neil, or I don't think this is going to work for me. And then like, he like, bro, I hit SDR of EMEA. And like, even like, you may remember this, Rich.
So
all my happy moments, it's not, I wouldn't call it my trophy folder, but it's my happy moments. And so when people say, why you, like, that is how you can build yourself as an asset. And the last tip that I want to give to SDRs is something that helped me so much about taking an interest in those people. A lot of the time when I meet new SDRs and we have our first session, the first question I ask them is, Janie, how much or how little do you know about me? And the majority of the responses are saying, not much, if I'm honest with you. And my heart goes down a little bit like that. And I'm like, ugh. And I tell them who I am and I share my slide and everything. But I say to them at the end of the session, before any meeting with any new person or executive you're going to do, spend at least 5 minutes on the LinkedIn and just look at their journey and pick upon something which, you know, may be interesting to you. And ask them, like, what's the story there? Because the moment you start taking a bit of an interest, A, that's going to make your prospect happy and show that you have a vested interest in them. And as an SDR, research, there's a whole debate about how much time an SDR should spend, but always know a little bit about someone that you're going to reach out to. So like today when we're talking, as you were talking, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and I see that you worked at V7. And the reason that's made me smile, I've been working with the new SDRs at V7 for the past couple of weeks and I'm like, oh shit, Janie had some experience and history in there. And again, we may not have time to talk about this today, but it's just taking that interest in someone can make them smile and show that you want to know about them a little bit more. So yeah, 30 seconds to a minute. Just quickly check out the LinkedIn before that first meeting with them. That could help them out. What do you think?
Cost nothing in time. You literally do it, and not even just LinkedIn, but like when I do SWOT calls with SDRs today and I do one-on-one SWOTs and I say, before I press play on this call and we listen to it together, tell me what the company does. And they go, and I'm like, right, if you can't tell me now, then I know that you've gone into that call having a look at very briefly at, or you've had a very brief look at Sales Loft and saw what most recent email you've sent. And do it. Any SDR manager now, do it with your SDRs, because trust me, they won't be able to, or you will. And I was used to be the same, right? If you asked me, Janie, tell me about this company, I'd be like, great question. Might be fintech, might be in e-com, not too sure, can't remember. But the reason is, if you can't recall that now before we even press play, or even try and quickly do it whilst we're on the call, because you, all my reps now know that I'm going to ask that question, so they prep well for them. Their SWOTs. But it's true, right? Like, if you can't tell me, like, the business, like, some of the things they've done recently, or if someone's new to role at that company, then the person that you're speaking to on the phone is equally going to know the same thing as well. It costs nothing in time. And if you really think it's that arduous to do, then maybe start leveraging tools like AI that massively help just speed up that process. There's ways that we can make it work without it needing to be scary. But I genuinely think, like, that investment in time could be what gets you the meeting.
100%. And the meeting thereafter, that initial meeting. And I'll give you one quick story. So I've met some people like from V7. I can't mention any names or anything in particular. But it was really funny when they met me for the first time. And a lot of SDRs do this to me. So I'm like, how much do you know about me? And they're like, not much. And I show them my history, they're like, cool. And one of the questions that comes up, or I know that the thing is like, Neil, you don't work in my industry or company, so you probably don't know too much about what I do. And, you know, like, we do this, we are the market leading. And I hear it and I'm like, yeah. And I said, I've worked in cybersecurity, fintech, I work with a lot of people, but I don't say anything for ego's sake, right? I'm like, okay, that's cool. And we typically do this cold call role play where I ask them to treat me like a prospect and I want them to go with the beginning of their call, the middle of their call, and then the end of the call. And I say to them, Janie, I'm not looking for a perfect cold call, but I just want to hear how you go through those steps. And then we'll stop and we'll do like a 3-minute debrief as to how you feel you go. And then I do this thing where I said, okay, we're now going to flip it. I'm going to cold call you as if I'm working for your company. And they look at me like, yeah, all right, come on, bro, let's go for it. And what I do is I go in with my opener, I do my middle bit, and then what I do is I share a story of one of their customers and I talk about the metrics and successes they've achieved. And then I typically book the meeting. And most of these role plays, they're like, they can't mess with it. And I come out at the end of it and I said, so Janie, what do you think? They're like, I love the opener, but I love the customer story that you had. And you knew all those metrics and you know the name of the CTO and you know what we helped them with AI. And they were just like, how did you do that? And I quickly pull up my screen. I said, I read your case study before I came onto this call of your customer. And I said, when's the last time you checked your website? They said, we haven't checked it. And I'm like, and I say to them, did it sound like I worked for your company, that I've been there for years and know my stuff? And they were like, yeah. And I said, I don't. And I'm not an expert in your industry, but it was just me taking a couple of minutes to read about one of your customers to help me prepare for this cold call today. And they're like, that shit hot, Neil. Like, I need to do that. And I'm like, cool. But again, you wouldn't know unless you've done it, have gone through it or been shown it. Same way you have said as a manager, what do you know about this company? So spending a little bit of prep time can blow people's mind. And typically at the end of that call, they're like, yeah, I want to book in my next session with you. I'm like, yeah, I bet you do.
Right? Yeah. But I think to that point, like, that's storytelling, right? And like, storytelling is so hard ingrained in humans. Like, we've been doing it for centuries and centuries. Like, cave paintings are the earliest signs of telling stories creatively.
And it's music. A way that you... Music and rappers, it's storytelling, right?
Exactly. And like, some of the best rappers that I've used to listen to, the ones that have got you so hooked on the actual story they're walking you by. And on surface level, you're just hearing rap. But actually, if you're really listening, there's so much more. And for those of you who don't know, I actually used to do spoken word like back at the same time. And I was doing, I'll take that offline. But you know, I used to do that. And equally, it's the same thing, right? Like when you've really got someone engaged, it's because they're listening to what you've got to say. And what you've got to say, believe me, learning about the back-end API integrations of your platform is the least interesting thing I hear on a call. But actually, when you're telling me about conversations you're having, I'm far more gripped. And there's a reason why gossip exists, is people are gripped to stories. Mm. So doing that costs nothing in time to quickly read some case stories, aggregate that information. Also, talking to people and doing less talking yourself. Like, when you have got the prospect talking and you're just asking them about surface level questions that aren't really anything to do about the platform, you learn so much that you can then pick up and play and use in other conversations. But that's really what is the human condition. What makes humans humans is that storytelling aspect.
You're right. And coming to this quote, maybe you said you needed to take this back into therapy, where you're working with the people buy from people. And it is a good quote, but there's a part that a lot of people miss, which is people buy from people that understand them.
Yes.
Right. And if you take that vested interest in understanding people and you do speak their language and understand their world, you'll be able to relate to them better. By relating to them better, you build better rapport with them. And that is why they will choose you as the vendor or the person that they want to work with, versus just the person that knows that this VP of sales or head of marketing needs this solution because it works for everyone else. But understanding why it works for them and why it's important to them is why they will choose you. And it's, you know, I've done this as a coach, as a trainer, or being booked as a musician, because I know how to do crowd control. And I know that I can't come on as a pirate radio MC and just spit bar, bar, bar. I need to say, hey, right, everybody, we're going to have some fun now. Get the crowd right. Everybody say, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know how to work it. And I understand ravers that when they're really drunk, they don't want to hear like hard Drake bars or Stormzy bars. They just want a light guy that keeps them motivated, like a hit class. That's what they're looking for when everybody starts on, I can't be bothered. I understand my ravers, but I understand, you know, the promoters, that they're looking for a high energy MC that will bring a crowd with them because of their social following, or they've either had a track made and it brings people. So that's why I think understanding those people or asking those questions. And this is why we do the podcast. You know, I've said it to a lot of people, don't come into this podcast looking for the tactical tips of how to get to President's Club or whatever it is, or what's the best cold call opener. Nah, this is about beautiful people like yourself, your journey. I have an interest in it. I want to learn about that. And I want to take this knowledge and share it out there. So I know a lot of people that have been listening or watching to this, and don't forget to subscribe, rate on the podcast, and make sure that you like, comment below down on the YouTube. To help others and to learn, because again, this is, I've seen it, like, we've done over 100 episodes, and a lot of those people that have come on, they've either gone off to do other things, and they've gone into either leadership once they were an SDR. And when I was having this power hour conversation with this person, the funniest thing they said, that we had a great deep chat for 10 minutes in the power hour. He said, Neil, man, like, this is amazing, like, you should do a podcast. And I said to him, I do, I have one. He was like, really? And I was like, yeah. I said, just put in happy selling /podcast. And he said, and you could see the look on his face. He was like, shit, man, you've got like 110. Like, really? I'm like, and he said, what's this about? I said, it's for brand new SDRs like you. And he's like, this is what I need. I needed something like this. I was like, uh-huh. And I said, if you only did a little bit of research before you came into this, you might have known that stuff because it's all over my LinkedIn.
All the time, all the time. Like, we'll be looking at like prospects together, like in one-to-ones. And I'll be like, oh, this is an account you're working. Okay, let's go back in sales nav and find some additional people. Hmm. Oh, look, this person joined the business 6 months ago and they had their own recent article they've posted.
Yeah.
Have we used it? Oh, right. What? But like, and I think honestly, it just comes from, like, people are a product of their environment. People are trying to move fast. They're trying to hit target. It goes to show to the point you made all 40-odd minutes ago. It's like, if you are constantly thinking you're at the top of your game or you need to be at the top of your game, you ignore actually the small 1% that can get you to the bigger number. And, like, when we talk about constantly being curious, like, it's one of the biggest assets you can have as an SDR.
100%, 100%. Jay, these conversations are beautiful and I've loved them. And again, a massive thank you to our listeners and our watchers. As a courtesy, if you could please make sure that you give a rating and subscribe to the podcast and share this powerful episode with anybody that you feel it could inspire. And equally, if you're on our YouTube channel, please give us a like, rating, comment, and share below. And the reason that I ask this is we have an algorithm, and the more people that can engage with this and get Janie's story out there, the more people it can help. And that is the goal of this show out here. But coming back to the curiosity to kind of wrap us up here today, Janie, is if you could go back to that young 20-something Janie who is just about to embark on this awesome journey, rather than what would you change, what three bits of advice would you give to her to help her take those steps?
I say first is to continue being fearless. Actually, I think that was the biggest superpower that I had, was the fearlessness and also being super vulnerable. I didn't really fear judgment. I didn't really give time to judgment. I didn't even consider judgment was something that I needed to worry about.
Mm.
So continue being fearless. I think the second one I would go for is curiosity is your biggest asset and friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the next one and the final one goes hand in hand with curiosity is bravery. And I know they're all kind of synonyms of each other, but actually, like, sometimes in order to be curious, you need to be brave in asking the hard questions and the direct questions that may not always feel comfortable asking. And that's both internally and externally. And I think fearlessness, bravery, and curiosity, all mega important in a sales capacity. So often now I get reps who are really fearful of phones, or fearful of conversation not going their way, or fearful that they don't sound like they really know the product in and out. And actually that fear comes from a lack of curiosity, because if you're so focused, like, you're so focused on yourself and your what others think of you, people aren't really thinking about you that much. They aren't. And actually, like, be curious, turn the conversation back on them, back on the company that you're speaking with. You'll get the wins that you need, but actually you need to overcome bravery and being brave and speaking up and speaking loud. And also being brave and knowing that if you feel like you sound silly, you're the only probably person that thinks it. So that would be the advice I'd give to 20-year-old me.
I love that. So fearless, bravery, and curiosity, FBC, bars from Janie. I love that. Awesome source. Also, as a reminder, Janie's LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes. So I highly encourage checking her out, connecting, asking any questions that you've got from today's show. And also, I need to give a little shout out to my son. The reason why I wanted to say this, I found out that my little boy has been watching these episodes and he's been watching on our YouTube channel. I never thought he would. So Daddy loves you. Blake, if you're watching this, hope this has been cool for you as well. And if you're watching this in the future, thank you very much. If you're watching this in the future, Blake, when you're a bit older, Dad still loves you and this is why your dad's crazy. But for the rest of our listeners and watchers, thank you for being part of the SDR Disco Call show. This is a show for brand new sales development reps and also for leaders and anybody experiencing or thinking about coming into the world of tech sales. I've been your host, Neil Boone. Thank you very much. And Janie, pleasure to have you on board. And most importantly, Janie, happy selling.
Thank you.